Hello, and welcome back to the annual Succeed with ADHD Telesummit. This is our ninth year delivering to you the most advanced ADHD information available from leading ADHD experts in the most accessible format possible. We're warmed up and ready to go with our guests and topics for today. I'm Lori DeParr from Coaching for ADHD and the International ADHD Coach Training Center. You can find out more about my private coaching practice at coaching.com or about the International ADHD Coach Training Center by going to IACCenter.com. I want to be sure to thank our VIP Telesummit sponsors, the ADHD Palooza for women and parents. You can find out more about the Palooza at ADHDPalooza.com and be sure to mark your calendars for July 29th when the Parents Palooza will start. Over the last 8 years of hosting this telesummit, we've realized that you lead busy lives, and it can be difficult to have the time, yet remember to listen in to the telesummit multiple times each day. So this year, we're making it simple. Rather than you having to remember to tune in and out throughout the day, we're recording the sessions, and each day of the telesummit, 5 of the speakers will be featured. You'll have 24 hours to listen to that day's audios whenever and in whatever order you want. So block out time to listen to all 5 audios for that day or listen to them in bite-sized chunks throughout the day. You get to decide what works best. Just remember, you'll have 24 hours of complimentary access to listen to that day's featured speakers before the audios are updated. And if you're already worried about listening to all the information or know you might have to miss out on an entire day's presentations, we have an easy option for you. Simply upgrade to the ADHD Success Toolkit now. For only $97, you'll get extended access to all the speaker topics and recordings on the telesummit. And as a special bonus, when you purchase the ADHD Success Toolkit, you'll also get the speaker bonuses that the presenters are offering, especially for those who upgrade to the toolkit. These additional bonuses include complimentary ADHD downloads, templates, ebooks, tools, audios, resources, complimentary access to future webinars or products from this year's telesummit presenters, and even ADHD Life Coaching. To upgrade to the ADHD Success Toolkit, simply go to the telesummit website at succeedwithadhdtelesummit.com and follow the ADHD Success Toolkit links. Or right now, you can email us at support@succeedwithadhdtelesummit.com. That's support@succeedwithadhdtelesummit.com, and we will be happy to help you with that purchase. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce you to our guest for this next half hour. Her name is Shawn Roney. Let me tell you just a little bit about her. Shawn is a life and ADHD coach who works with women that have high-functioning ADHD or ADHD tendencies and prefer a natural approach to treatment. Her focus is to educate to increase awareness, coach to help uncover obstacles, and share strategies to help ease and manage tendencies. As a graduate of both the International ADHD Coach Training Center and the Life Coach School, she has had specialty training on ADHD, how to coach those affected by it, and how to help clients successfully navigate their thoughts. And it's my pleasure to welcome Shawn to the telesummit this year, and she's going to be talking with us about Manage Your ADHD Mind, a Natural Approach for Women. Welcome, Shawn.
Thank you so much for having me, Lori.
I am so excited to have you here, and I love this topic that you are bringing to us today. And I'm curious, as I'm reading the title, we think about managing ADHD in a lot of different ways, but not necessarily about managing our mind. I'm wondering how you got interested in this topic.
Yeah, so there are studies out there that show that the typical person has anywhere upwards from 50,000 thoughts a day. And I'd like to say probably for those of us with ADHD, it can be many, many more. And most of those thoughts, many of those thoughts are unconscious, so we're not aware that we're thinking them. And then what I also found interesting is that a lot of them are negative, and from one day to the next, about 90% of what we think is rinse and repeat. So it's a thought that we had the day before, we just continue. It's more efficient for our brain. It doesn't have to work too hard to just think the same things from day to day. And so I got really curious about that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know that. And I love how you said those of us with ADHD think a little bit more, right? That's kind of an understatement. But wow, interesting. And the negative thinking and that a lot of it's repeated. That's amazing. So what is it that I know you have a special focus on working with women, and I'm wondering what is it that we women with ADHD need to manage about? I mean, how can we manage some of these thoughts, or where do we start? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, so I think the one thing with women especially to be aware of is that there's often what I call the double whammy. And so there's the thing that's happening. So, for example, let's say someone can't get to work on time and they're consistently late, and that in and of itself may be a problem. They may be late for meetings or miss calls. They risk being fired. They could get in trouble with their boss. So that's a problem, and their thought about it might be, I hope I don't get fired, and they feel nervous. But then on top of that, there's the double whammy. There's a tendency toward that negative self-talk. And so scaffolding thoughts like, what's wrong with me? Or why do I always screw this up? Or I can't be on time to save my life. I'm a hot mess. And so when we think those thoughts that come really quickly, we get that second feeling of shame. And so it's like adding insult to injury. So we can feel the discomfort and the nervousness because we're late, but then we also judge ourselves for being late because we think we shouldn't be.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that, but it's so true, right? It's not enough to be late, but that, or to have that initial sort of goof that we make. But on top of that is like you said, that insult to injury, just that extra way of that extra, how that thinking is so detrimental or so negative.
Yeah, and then we just stay in, kind of stuck in this negative thought loop. It's hard to get out of that when we start piling on all of the negative talk on top of what's happening. And then there's a second piece to it. I think for women, many times we're wired or predisposed to be kind of the nurturers or the caregivers. And so when we do this, we tend to want to like take on the responsibility for other people's feelings, like managing how other people feel. And so not only is it impossible, but it's exhausting. But I'm sure many of us can relate to the feeling of like wanting to behave a certain way or show up a certain way so that someone else can feel better. And so it's really it's not possible. And so it can be frustrating. It can be exhausting. We may be able to hold it up for a while. But over time, it's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm taking this down and thinking, there's the thing that we do, right? The thought that we have about it, like you said, the double whammy. And then if that's not enough, then we feel like we're letting everybody else down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
And so the good news is, like, when we realize that we create our feelings with how we think, that means everybody else does that too. And so it kind of relinquishes that responsibility from us in a way. I mean, we can barely manage our own emotions, right? So we have no business trying to manage how others feel. It's kind of relieving to know that we don't have to hold responsibility for that.
Yeah, we have no business trying to manage somebody else's feelings. Say that again, Sean, because you said something that I think could have been missed. And by the way, because I probably missed it for at least 50 years of my life. Something about creating feelings.
Yeah. So what I was going to talk about in a bit, and I'll touch on it now because it's a great time to bring it up, is this framework called the model. And it basically has five parts to it. And the short version of it is that there are circumstances that happen in the world, and we have zero control over them. We have thoughts about all of those circumstances. And then what we choose to think is what actually creates how we feel. We often think, like, what's happening out in the world is causing us to feel a certain way. But if we, like, slow down enough to really notice, usually a thought has snuck in there somewhere. And if we can kind of notice what that thought is and realize that it's creating how we feel, it actually kind of gives us our power back over that feeling.
Yeah. And the last, so go through the steps of the model again. Do you mind just doing it one more time?
No. So there's five steps to it. The first one is circumstance. So the letter C for circumstances. Mm-hmm. And those are things that happen in the world that are out of our control often. They're strictly factual, so everyone in the world would agree on them. And they're neutral. And then the next step of the model is thoughts. So we call that the T line. And our thoughts are sentences in our brains. This includes opinions, it includes our beliefs. Third part of the model is the F line, so feelings. And feelings for this purpose are going to be one word vibrations that we feel in our bodies. So when you think of like nervous or sad or angry, you can typically find a place where you feel that. So, like, let's take anger, for example. A lot of times you can feel anger in your fists as you're clenching them. Or, like, scared, you can feel in your chest or in your throat. It's different for everybody. So we want to try to get to one feeling. And then the next line is A. It's our actions. And so these are the things that we then do in response to how we feel. So sometimes we take massive action and we do a lot of things. Sometimes we take no action, so inaction. We avoid. We procrastinate. We put off. And then sometimes we react. And then the fifth part is the R line, and that's for our results. And the results are what we actually see in our lives based on our actions. What are we creating? What results are we creating?
Hmm. What a great model this is. It makes so much sense and really breaks down those pieces from something happening to all of a sudden that reaction and gives us some other pieces to be looking at or to be aware of that are actually happening.
Yeah, it's almost a filter. So I find myself kind of checking in with myself, like, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? Or wherever the predominant. So if I'm feeling something really strongly, starting with that feeling and then asking myself, what am I thinking that's creating this? Like, what are my thoughts about this situation? So when you're just kind of flowing through it, basically there's circumstances that happen that are neutral. We then have thoughts about them. Our thoughts generate feelings in our body. Our feeling then drives us to take action, and then our actions create our results.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
So I don't know if it's helpful to have an example of that at this
point. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
So quite a few of my clients will say something they struggle with is finishing things. So the circumstance, the C line, would be an unfinished project. And their thought about it might be, I just can't get myself to finish anything. When they think that thought, their feeling is frustrated. When they feel frustrated, the things that they tend to do are avoid the thing that they actually want to finish because it reminds them of what they don't do. They may go to take a walk. They may go to lunch with a friend. They may just spin in confusion, kind of like, I don't know what to do next. I'm not sure what the next step is. And the result is the project stays unfinished.
Right. A great example.
Versus, we can take it to the flip side where the circumstance is the same. There's an unfinished project. the thought, and this is one that I've used because it's helpful for me actually, I will deflect distractions like Wonder Woman and keep going. And when I think that thought, no lie, I feel determined. I picture, you know, the metal wristbands and all. And then when I'm feeling determined, the action that I take is I schedule time to work on the project. I make decisions about it. I just get started and set my timer. You know, you've talked about timers, and that's a helpful tool. I'll set a completion date. So when does it need to be done by? And the result is it can be a finished project. It may be. But even if it's not, it's like forward motion, so progress towards a finished project. It doesn't just remain unchanged.
Right. And it's the, and when we're talking about it here, and it, it's that I'm trying to think what you said, because it was like there's that, there's a very subtle switch there, and it starts with the thought, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about, right? Thinking and the mind, what you think about it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is a lot of the time, we will say, for example, I just can't get myself to finish anything. We will say that like it's factual.
Yeah.
People really believe that about themselves. Like, there's nothing I can do about it. It's the truth.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody's saying to themselves, I never can finish anything, what's that change and that to be able to switch that thinking?
Yeah, so by, like, when you're focused on what you haven't been able to do in the past, which, by the way, is like what our brains are going to look to for evidence. Like, whatever we choose to think, our brain is going to take the path to least resistance. It's going to scan our past for evidence of whatever it is that we're thinking. So when someone's thinking they just can't finish anything, their brain is going to go off on a mission to scan all of their past and find evidence that they haven't finished things. And it will show that to us, right? Our brain's going to be like, remember, you didn't finish this. Remember this project you didn't finish? How about that one over there?
Yeah, right.
But when we that subtle shift, right, that you just mentioned, and we decide to think something different, like I'll deflect distractions like Wonder Woman and keep going, our brain is then off on a mission searching for instances where we kept going and find evidence for it.
Right.
So yeah, it's really we've been on this like well-worn path, right? Our brain, our neural pathway, it's like well-walked. We've traveled it a lot. And so it's just deciding to like take a step to the left or a step to the right and find a new path.
And find a new path, right. And I like how you say that, Sean, because it can feel, what you're talking about can feel huge, I think, to some people. Like, I can't even think of another thought when I've got that one thought in my head. And just what you said, it's like like you said, a step to the left or step to the right. You're not talking about, you know, rebuilding the whole a freeway, right? You're just saying, just step and onto another and create another path for yourself.
Yeah, and then what happens is I think the more that we start to notice that and do that, there's that compounding effect. So our brain starts to then add up, like, oh, they actually gave us this new thought, and we stayed on that path. Oh, she gave this new thought, and we stayed on that path that time. And so as the evidence builds up, it's like a snowball, right, you're pushing uphill, and you get to the top. It finally starts to pick up a little less resistance, and your brain starts just believing you're a person that can change your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden it goes from, hey, I'm in control as the brain, to, oh, well, maybe she is in control of me. I don't feel like my brain is a separate person, right?
Yeah, right. Well, sometimes it feels like it is, right? Yeah.
True.
Now, there's a part of this, we've been talking about the thoughts, but I'm wondering, sometimes we can get stuck in the feeling, right? I'm just wondering more about the feeling piece. Yeah.
So when you feel stuck in a feeling, I think actually this kind of leads into the sneaky feelings. And I call them sneaky because feelings can feel like they're happening to us, like they're imposed on us, or like they're just completely out of our control. Like they're just there. It feels like whatever's happening around us is causing us to feel overwhelmed or is causing us to feel bored. And so, again, it's just like remembering, oh, wait a minute, how am I feeling? And what am I thinking that's making me create this? An exercise that's good for that actually is to identify the three most common feelings that you experience on a daily basis. And it's really interesting just to see, like, what are your go-to familiar feelings?
Hmm.
And then ask yourself, why do I feel that way? And how is it serving me? And again, just to bring awareness and make space for them. So it's not about like judging our feelings or trying to change them right away, or rush away from them or avoid them. It's really just about noticing them, noticing how often they show up, and realizing how our thinking is influencing how we feel.
Hmm. It's a really great, it sounds like a really great exercise to do, to just to pick three first off and notice those, and no judging going on, and just, like you said, be curious about it, and wonder how it's serving us and what's the thinking that's creating that. Yeah.
For myself, I noticed bored. I hated to feel bored.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just got really curious about bored, to the point where I would, you know, at the end of a long day, finally go to sit down on the couch next to my mm-hmm. husband. And as soon as my butt would hit the sofa, I'd pop right back up.
Because
I just could not sit there and relax because it felt boring.
Wow.
And when I thought about it, I had a million thoughts about boredom.
Like rules about what boredom was, or what you thought, what it's not supposed to be, those kinds of things?
Things like, this isn't fun. There's something more exciting I could be doing right now. What can I get done really quickly? Like, is there one more thing I can squeeze in before I sit down for the night? Mm-hmm. Relaxing is overrated. I'll rest in my grave. That one sounds awful. But seriously, my dad and I have laughed about that because he is a similar uh-huh. strain. You know, apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Right.
And so we're like, we're going to live to the max. There's no time for resting. It's all going to be, if it's not fun, I'm not doing it. Not helpful.
No. And I'm wondering if we're talking, and those feelings are really sneaky. And by looking at them like you did with this boredom, it sounds like there were all sorts of things you didn't even realize that you actually thought about boredom that was creating that bored feeling.
Yeah, and ultimately I got to, like, what's wrong with being bored? Like, I can be bored sometimes. It's fine.
Hmm. Huh. So you that's what, so it, I'm looking at sort of the piece was just it, you change what you thought about it. It's okay to be bored.
Yeah. Eventually I just decided there's times I'm going to be bored and it's fine. Like, what's the worst that happens when I'm bored? Nothing. I feel bored. Fine.
Right.
Really? Like, you expect something horrible is going to happen. It's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. What did I, it's a great example, and what a shift, right? To go, wow, I guess it's okay, or I'm going to be bored sometimes and I'm not going to die.
Yeah, and then what happens is it becomes useful in other areas, right? Because there are times when it's not just about relaxing. It's like something that I actually need to get done to move closer to like a goal that I have. And it may not be the most fun thing, right? It might be boring. And my brain is just now like, oh, yeah, we can do bored things. So I practice in a non-threatening environment where I'm just talking about relaxing. But then it's useful when I actually need to be able to, you know, do something important, but that's not fun.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you would give us an example, because I hear, I think one of the toughest one of these, and I'm just curious how, because my guess is, because this is such an incredible model of looking at this, sort of that feeling of being, I'm not motivated.
Yeah, it's funny with motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think people think it comes from outside of themselves. So like they need to be inspired to feel motivated or like motivation happens to them. Again, I'm like, what are thoughts that we can think that can generate the feeling of motivation? And do we need to feel motivation? Like, what's interesting with motivation is when I ran through my feelings and the ones that I need to feel to get things done, focused and motivated were not in my top list. What felt much more real for me is I need to feel driven or determined or committed. So now for me, I'm kind of like, yeah, I mean, I could feel motivated or not, but what I really need to feel to get the job done for me is dedicated or driven or committed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For some people, it might be motivation, and I just think try on the sentence or the question, what thoughts can I think that can generate the feeling of motivation for me? And it's going to be different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It might be when I get this finished or I can go do, you know, something that they're looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might be the faster I get this done, the faster I can move on.
And I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking, and I love how you're doing, how you are. It's not just, it's actually being able to very specifically realize it's complicated. It's very simple, but it's taking something that's so complicated or can feel really complicated and giving you a way to sort of work through that. And like you're just talking about with the motivation, I love how you realize for you, it's not really motive. If I think I need motivation to get things done, you realize that wasn't really it, at least what you thought was motivation. You realize there were other things. And my sense is that as people go through this, like you said, it's going to be different for each person, that they'll discover that for themselves. For me to get things done, there's a big instance of persistence. I wish I could be Wonder Woman, but I'm more like a big bowl in a china closet, honestly. Like, I'm just like plowing through. But it is very different, right? And I hadn't really thought about that, that they are very different to me, and it gives me something that I can now grab hold of and feels very real.
It's very personal.
It's very personal. That's awesome. So Sean, this is amazing, and thank you so much for sharing this model with us. And a different way, really, that I've ever heard of to help manage our mind and to become aware of how our thoughts are impacting so much of what we're doing and giving us a structure to be able to start to look at it a different way. Anything that you'd like to leave the listeners with before we need to wrap up for today?
Yeah, I think just be aware of those sneaky emotions, again, that you're not noticing in the background. There's a quote I heard, worry is like rocking in a rocking chair. It's very active and gets you nowhere. And so there are emotions like worry that feel like they're doing something. And just like notice and ask yourself, but are they? Like, is it helpful for me to be feeling this way? Because how we think is how we live.
Yeah, great point. Great point. I love that. I've never heard that quote before, but how true is that, right? We think we're getting some of really just going back and forth or like in a hamster wheel getting nowhere, right? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing this with us. And after having this time with you, I'm absolutely sure people are going to want to know how to get a hold of you. But before that, would you just share with everyone what the bonus gift is that you're offering to our listeners who decide that they want to do the upgrade? If I have it right, it's an e-course. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So it's called the Imagine It course, and it's a self-guided course that takes you through 4 weeks of really planning your future from a place of possibility versus probability. Mm. And so we talk about dreaming big, feeling brave, charting a course, and showing up. So there's a video for each week, and then there's worksheets that go along with it, and then there's a group coaching call at the end to kind of pull it all together.
Sounds absolutely amazing. I'm sure people are going to want to get be able to take advantage of that. Thank you for including that as a bonus in our success toolkit, Sean. And how can people get a hold of you? What's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, my website is revealedpath, revealedpath.com.
Great, revealedpath.com. Thank you. Thank you so much, Sean. Thank you for sharing your time and your experience and your creativity with us on the TeleSummit this year. What a great last 30 minutes spending with you. I have some things I'm going to be practicing. I know as I move forward here, I just love this model that you've given to us. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this session with Sean and myself. You know, there's a lot more coming, so make sure that you stay tuned in. And until then, stay amazing, and I'll see you on the next call. Bye-bye now, everybody.